Hello, everyone. I'm Alicia Krause, and welcome to this episode of The Conversation with our very own Andrew Klavan. Don't forget today to ask questions as a subscriber. Only subscribers can ask questions. Be sure to log on to our website, dailywire.com, and head over to The Conversation page to watch the live stream. After that, just start typing into the Daily Wire chat box, where Drew will answer questions as they come in for an entire hour.
Oh, God.
These chairs are so
uncomfortable. Hope you went to the bathroom beforehand. Michael's conversation, that is our very own Michael Knowles, has been confirmed for Tuesday, November 14th at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. I can't wait to rip him and give him a very hard time.
That should be really entertaining because he doesn't know anything. So asking him questions would be really worth a laugh.
That'll be lots of fun. So I'm excited to talk to Michael that day. That'll be great. So we're having some questions come through. We're going to get to as many as possible. I like to say people's names and sometimes where they're from, like, okay. That's okay with you, right?
No, you should give their addresses and their phone numbers and we'll send people around to their house. No salesman will call.
No salesman will call at all. We won't go that far at all. So how are you liking being at the Daily Wire? I mean, this is kind of a different pace for you to do a daily podcast, right?
It's kind of an amazing experience.
Yeah?
It's about 10 times more work than I thought it was going to be, but it's about 100 times more fun. I mean, you have to understand, people don't understand this about me. I'm a writer. I have lived my life in a room by myself. I really have. I mean, mm-hmm. I spend most of my time in a room by myself doing things with commas, you know, like I'm going to take that comma from here and take it there. And coming out into the actual world has been a shock. I mean, it really has, to actually be talking, to be on camera. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never expected ever to do anything where I would be on camera, except an occasional interview.
So do you like the interaction that you have with your listeners and your fans?
Yeah, well, that's the best part. That's the thing I like best. I mean, the thing about writing a book is even now, when you could possibly publish a book, instantaneously, mm-hmm. you don't. You send it to your publisher, sometimes it takes 8 months. Mm-hmm. You get some reactions because now everything's on email and all that stuff, but it's not the kind of personal relationship that you have like this. It's very distant still. I remember the first time they made one of my books into a movie. I remember being on an airplane, mm-hmm. and they played my movie on the airplane.
Cool.
And you looked around and you thought, like, there are people listening to mm-hmm. stuff I wrote. You know, I could see with the headsets, and that was the first time I realized I had this like kind of personal relationship with people. I mean, you always know vaguely you're writing for people, mm-hmm. but you never see it. You know, where here everything is instantaneous, and also you get to hear a little bit more about what people like. You know, you say something and people say, well, I don't like that. I don't like that you said that, you know, and that maybe you did this wrong or you did that. Mm-hmm. And so that's educational. You know, you start to find out who's out there. You really do not have that relationship when you just write. Even now when everything's instantaneous, you simply don't have the direct relationship because you never know. I mean, the people who leave comments can be awfully angry people. You know, you don't like a
not
lot.
All of you.
The people who leave comments on your writing.
Yep.
You know, a lot of times there's trolls and all this stuff. And you don't really know what the audience is. But something like this, especially because the Daily Wire has a great group of people. Not flattering them. Mm-hmm. Seriously, a great group of people. I don't know. It's just a lot more personal and interactive, and I like it.
Well, that's the great thing about The Conversation. So if you mm-hmm. want to ask questions and be a part of our conversations with our Daily Wire hosts like Ben Shapiro, Michael Knowles, and our very own Andrew Klavan, please go subscribe and become a member right now. So let's get started.
All right.
All righty. Spencer is asking, how can conservatives make themselves intellectually respectable when the left portrays political debates as contests between their informed, dispassionate reasoning and our stupidity and dishonesty?
Well, that is exactly, that's an excellent description of what the left does. And mm-hmm. they do it, and it's everything the left does is magnified because they have the megaphone of the press. So they have the networks, they have the New York Times, they have the Washington Post, all the big mm-hmm. angles, and they have the late night comedy shows and all the actors and all this stuff. So they have put, you know, like for instance, virtually any issue that you deal with has two sides, mm-hmm. most issues. I mean, if you're not talking about like slaughtering the innocent, you're talking about things with two sides. And so let's say, for example, you have a debate about gay marriage, and one person is saying, well, gay people are people, and they love each other, and they should be free to be married. Mm-hmm. And the other people are saying, well, wait, you know, marriage is a pillar of our society. It's a central bastion of freedom. We don't want to change the definition. That's a debate. That's two decent human beings can sit down and have mm-hmm. that debate together. What the left does continually, as Spencer says, is they cast it as you are either a good, open-minded, open-hearted person who will accept gay marriage, or you're an evil, hateful person. And it doesn't matter that 2 years ago, or whenever it was 2008, Barack Obama was against gay marriage, and then suddenly he's for it. It doesn't matter. All that stuff, that past is gone. So what I always try to do is, first, get rid of personalities. Mm-hmm. You know, don't talk about Donald Trump. Don't talk about Barack Obama. Don't say he did this, you did this, this is happening. Talk about principles. What is the principle that you're defending? And once you get them to that place, there's not that much they can do. They have to engage. And obviously, you're always going to get attacked. There's no way. One of the things I sometimes feel is that people are, because I get questions like this a lot, and I feel like people are asking me, how can they have this discussion without paying the price? You can't. You can't. They're going to come after you. They're going to call your names. They're going to do all that stuff. But get them on principle. So I always start, like, for instance, when I speak to people, I always say, I'm a freedom guy. I believe in freedom. So gay people want to get married? Okay. But a baker doesn't want to cater that. That's okay, too. You know, you've got to have your freedom depends on letting the other guy be free.
Would you say that that's a libertarian stance or a conservative stance?
I am kind of more of a libertarian when it comes to this sort of thing. Okay. For the simple reason that this wasn't true in the old days when we had more of a moral consensus. Mm-hmm. It was okay for the government to have laws against homosexuality because everybody, including homosexuals, thought that homosexuality was wrong. That consensus has collapsed. A government now that can control what you do in your bed is too big a government. It's too big a government. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's a change that's come upon us. I think that it's a change that conservatives were too slow to pick up on. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand that they were going to lose that fight. I did. I knew that they were going to lose that fight. And so I tend to be libertarian about that. And of course, conservatism and libertarianism are Venn diagrams. They're very close together. I would say there are a lot of things I'm conservative about. For instance, I'm not at all libertarian about abortion, which I don't think I don't think it's a libertarian issue. I think if you're killing somebody, you know, you can't just say like you have the right to do that.
So. Why do you think there is that disparity between libertarians and abortion?
Well, you know, I'm frequently asked by libertarians, how can you, if you're for small government, mm-hmm. how can you be against a woman's right to an abortion? And the question, there's only one question about an abortion, and that is that a child? Is that a human entity, you know? Mm-hmm. And I simply don't see how you can say that it's not. Mm-hmm. The argument is always about what the fetus can do at that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, can it make a decision? Can it suffer? Can it do this? It doesn't matter because mm-hmm. we don't live just in place. We live in time. You're not just the person you are now. You're the person you were 10 years ago, and mm-hmm. you're all the memories that you have. And so if this infant in the womb is left alone, it will become a person who can decide, which is the same is true of you if you're asleep. You know, I can't say, well, you're asleep, you can't make a decision, so if I want to kill you, I can. Mm-hmm. No, because eventually you'll wake up. Eventually that child will be born. And I think that that's, once you take that out and you can tell that pro-abortion people do everything they can to delete that human being from the language. They don't talk about abortion. They don't talk about killing. They don't talk about babies. Mm-hmm. They, you know, it's if you're pregnant, as you know, that's a baby. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever says, oh, I'm having a fetus. Nobody ever says that.
Yep.
But once you start to talk about abortion, suddenly the pro-abortion people start to use this very vague, very scientific language to dehumanize mm-hmm. this person. You know, I always say about anything, I'm always in favor of the I'm always for the smallest guy in the room. You know, I'm always for the guy who doesn't have a voice or doesn't have a chance or doesn't get to say mm-hmm. anything. It seems to me in a room where abortion takes place, that's an easy, easy call.
So why do you think there's such a big difference between, because I'm always fascinated by this, why libertarians tend to say, okay, no, that's something that government shouldn't be involved in.
Well, libertarians as a movement are really kind of lost. I mean, all this stuff about whether marijuana can be, they get so obsessed with marijuana. You know, when you talk about them as a political party, I can't believe when you talk to libertarians and you bring up pot, they're still talking 30 minutes later. And you go like, it's pot. You know, you want to smoke a joint, but that's not an important political movement. So I think libertarianism is kind of lost as a political movement. As a philosophy, that's different. Mm-hmm. As the basic, look, I think basically, at the basis of conservatism is freedom. Mm-hmm. And if you are going to be free, the other person has to be free. And the only argument you can have against somebody else's freedom is if it impinges upon yours. Mm. And I think that when you listen to conservatives, for instance, when you listen to conservatives against gay marriage, mm-hmm. what they say is, the family is a principal support of freedom. Therefore, we have to protect the family. They're still talking about freedom. I'm a person who would rather let people be free and then work out the problem as it comes up. Hmm. So, you know, back in the 19th century in England, they would argue, should Catholics be allowed to vote? And they would say, well, no, because the Catholic won't just be loyal to England, he'll be loyal to the church as well. And what I would have said is, like, let them vote, and if that becomes a problem, we'll work it out at the time.
Okay. Let's keep moving. And don't forget to ask questions as a subscriber. You need to log in to the Daily Wire website, dailywire.com, and head over to the conversation page to watch the live stream. And after that, just start typing in the Daily Wire chat box, where Drew will answer questions as they come in for this entire hour. Our next question comes from Jacob Harris. He says, hello, Clavin. Do you agree with the sentiment that John Keegan expresses, that war is not politics carried out by other means, but rather it has predated it and comes from human nature?
Yes, I absolutely agree with this. And by the way, it's Lord Clavin. I absolutely agree with this. You know, if you read Shakespeare divided basically the activities of man into love and war. When you were at war, you were at war. And then when you came back, you got married, you reproduced, you had families and all this stuff. And then you went back to war.
To defend those families
families and all this. War, I always laugh when I hear somebody who's written an anti-war novel or an anti-war film. I always want to say, good, I'm writing an anti-hurricane film. You know, let's see if that solves anything, you know. Because I do think it's one of the activities of man. What has happened with war, and I think it's an important thing, and it's another thing that I think conservatives don't take into account. Mm-hmm. I mean, conservatives, for instance, have yet to incorporate in their minds the effect of birth control on the sexual lives of human beings. Technology changes things. It may not change the morals of things, but it changes what happens. If you were fighting a war in Homeric days, and you were a guy with a sword running out against other guys with swords, it's a very different situation than if you're running onto a field and people are wiped out, like in World War I, where they would just hose machine gun bullets over a field and an entire town would be wiped off the face of the earth in minutes, okay? Mm-hmm. That changes the morality of war. Nuclear weapons change the morality of war. There was a time when I think war was heroic. There was a time when, as horrible as it was, war was glorious. Now I think war is so horrific and so mass, so full of mass murder, that it's really hard to get the ancient glory out of it. And yet at the same time, men especially, the male especially, still feels that he wants to fight for something. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the problems we have in society is that natural basic instinct men have to want to fight for their women, to want to fight for the property, to want to fight for success, is thwarted because when you go out and fight, it's all just bombs going off and the guy next to you is gone and there's no glory in it whatsoever. I mean, the glory is theoretical in the sense that we understand it was glorious that you were brave enough to do that, but there's not the glory of watching a warrior go out with a sword and fight his way and hack his way through, which actually was like an athletic thing. That was an actual glorious thing. But I think it's a very basic thing. I think what we're dealing with is that our natures have been thwarted by technology, which has made war so horrifying and so full of mass death, that our basic nature to fight for what we believe in has been thwarted, and I think it creates a lot of problems.
So it's so interesting that you say that. How much involvement do you think culture has had in thwarting the masculinity specifically of American males?
Well, I think what happens is that culture would not be able to thwart men being men if you needed men to be men, as you did in the old days.
Okay.
It never would have occurred to a Viking woman to say, stop fighting all the time, because the minute you stop fighting all the time, she'd be gone.
Yeah.
You know, she'd be carried off by the next tribe that was fighting.
Yeah.
You know, it's on those moments like 9/11. I remember suddenly all those liberal ladies, all those feminist ladies going, oh, that's what men are for, because it's the men who run into those buildings. There's no getting around it. It's not women who go charging up the stairs when the building is coming down around you. It is the firemen. It's the policemen. Hmm. Those are the guys who do it. And then you remember, oh, this is part of what men are for. Now, of course, in our world, men actually do serve a lot of purposes, but they're new purposes. You know, the kind of technological advances do tend to stem from male ways of thinking, but it's not the same thing. It's not that obvious brute force. There is a force that protects us, the military and the cops and all that stuff, but we've gotten so powerful that it allows people like me to do other things like create and invent and all that.
I feel like I could talk to you about this for a whole hour because I just have like all these follow-up questions in my head. But we're going to get back to our subscribers in a moment. But first, we wanted to take a second to share with you about our very generous sponsor for this episode of The Conversation, Skillshare.
Skillshare. I love Skillshare, and it's just what we were talking about. Skillshare is this online community where you can get classes. There's, I don't know, there's like 3 million members with 17,000 classes. And what they are is video classes, a series of videos on a class will teach you all kinds of things, graphic design, DSLR photography, social media marketing, digital illustration, just about anything. I've used them a couple of times. I've used them. I went on to test them for our audience.
Well, that's smart.
Yeah, so I went on.
Hands
and I thought what I'll do is I'll go on the writing ones because I've been a professional writer all my life and I've been successful at it. I thought, I'll look at the writing classes. There were good writing classes.
Wow.
Good writing classes about how to market, how to write, you know, what to think about and all this stuff and how to plot. And they're taught by industry experts, experienced professionals. They're perfect if you're looking to build your career or start something on the side that you've always dreamed of doing. Skillshare is giving Andrew Klavan listeners a 1 month free trial of unlimited access to over 17,000 classes. What you do is you go to www.skillshare.com/Andrew and start your free month today.
That's super cool.
Isn't that cool?
And yeah. I mean, coming from a pro, you're kind of
tested them out.
You come in and you check it out for everybody. Eleanor wants to talk to you and say, hello, I was just wondering what your views, if any, were on UK politics, the parties and the current Prime Minister, Theresa May, or other well-known political figures such as Jeremy Corbyn and others.
Well, you know, I lived in England for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned very quickly in by doing this, and I learned it within a month of moving there, is you don't know anything about a country until you live there. You really don't. You do not know the ins and outs. You get a sense. I know sometimes, don't you ever read in the newspaper, wherever you're getting your news, you'll read about France, and you think, France is coming apart at the seams.
Yeah.
And then you'll go over there and think, that looks fine. You know, everything is fine.
It's okay. All the Eiffel Tower's still there.
Yeah, exactly. It all depends where
still
you are.
Still really great cheese and wine.
And then you get the good cheese and the good wine, great clothes and all that stuff.
Now all these French people are going to write in and be like, that's not what
we're all about. It is falling apart. But I lived in England for many years, and so I learned that you really don't know unless you live there, and now I have not lived there for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really know. I was deeply in favor of the UK, of Brexit. I was very much in favor of Brexit. Theresa May seems to have bobbled this ball. She was never in support of Brexit. And I started by saying you don't know that much about it, so you understand I'm an American talking about this. She didn't really support Brexit. I think the European Union is a mistake. I think that it has proven it's a mistake by its unbridled allowing of immigration coming in and basically insisting that you have to take these immigrants whether you want them or not, whether you can fit them or not, whether they fit your culture or not. And it's very left-wing and it's very intrusive. And the problem the British have is the British follow rules. So if you tell them, you know, and they do, by the way, if Brussels puts out a report saying, you know, your potato chip must have a curve in it that's 17, you know, an arc of this, you know, the British will sit around with their potato chips trying to, and of course the Italians are like, whatever.
Yeah,
we could care less.
Yeah.
So I would say that I'm in favor of it. I think Theresa May is blowing it, and I think it may not happen because she's done such a bad job. Hmm. Jeremy Corbyn is a dangerous guy. He is a clown like Bernie Sanders. He's their Bernie Sanders. He is like Bernie Sanders.
Or
he's
Trudeau.
A clown. Yeah, he does not know. He's a leftist, a socialist. He really does not know what socialism looks like. He should look at Venezuela. That is what socialism looks like. And the problem is he's so bad, he's so far left, because, you know, Britain really moved to the right. He's so far left that they think he's not going to get in. But Theresa May, remember, it's a parliamentary system. She has messed up enough. So he could very easily slip in, and then they're going to be in genuine trouble.
I'm curious to see what happens in Austria, where the new prime minister there is very young.
Yep, very young.
31.
Yep.
My age.
Yep.
He's going to be the new prime minister.
Yep.
And he's saying that he wants to pull out of the EU as well and make Austria a more sovereign nation.
I think he's a really good sign because whenever we hear that Germany or Austria is going to the right, we immediately see the jackboots and the Nazis and all this stuff. And this guy is just a moderate, you know, right winger who wants to pull away from the far right, but is a nationalist and does understand. I think that Muslim immigration is a big problem. I think that Islam has things inherently in its ideas that are at odds with the West, and just having them come in en masse is a bad mistake. And I think that if this guy can curtail that, if he can show respectable amount of success, suddenly a lot of other countries are going to be saying, you know what, we're not Nazis if we go a little bit to the right. It's not going to instantly turn us into Adolf Hitler.
It's interesting because we have friends from Scandinavian countries and they kind of say the same thing. They can't understand, and they're from socialist countries,
yeah,
and would identify as socialist, but they
That's
say,
right.
You Americans and your immigration, of course you should have a wall, because look what's happened to Europe.
It's ridiculous.
Where daily they're, terror attacks.
It is a conflation of race with belief. Mm. I don't care what color a person is, if he's an American, if he believes in the Constitution, he believes in freedom, I truly could care less. But you can have a belief system that is repugnant or just in conflict with the basic premises of the West. Hmm. If your belief system does not include freedom of religion, and Islam in a lot of ways does not, I understand can be interpreted many different ways, but there is a strain of it that does not. If you are not on line with women being an equal part of society, and I'm an anti-feminist, I say this as an anti-feminist, if you're not welcome in the West, you're a problem for the West. If that is your religion, if your religion is that not only can your women not be treated equally, but they can't leave. See, that's the important thing. Mm-hmm. If you want to have a religion where a woman can voluntarily say, oh yeah, I'll be part of your religion and I'll wear this crazy getup and all that stuff, that's fine. But if you kill her when she tries to leave, not so fine anymore.
And then it creates problems.
Right, and to me, you can't conflate ideas, which you're allowed to criticize and attack, even if they're religious ideas. You can't conflate those with race, which is totally just inborn, and you're made in the image of God, no matter what color you are.
No. Well, some people might argue with that.
Yeah, well, they'd be wrong, and they'd be hit by lightning the minute the words came out.
John wants to know, can you tell us what the appropriate scope of the government's role in protecting the environment? Only federal or state? None of the above? Your free use of land, but there are permanent side effects.
Permanent side effects. I think everybody understands, this is called the problem of the commons, everybody understands that the government has some role in regulating the use of common land, and of course the air would be included in that, because we all breathe the air. Nobody wants to go back to the London fogs, nobody wants to go back to the smog in LA. Smog in LA was cured by people saying we've got to cure this, and then they invented the catalytic converter, and it is really, really different out there than it is today.
I mean, if you Google a picture of like the valley in the 70s versus walk outside today.
I remember standing on a hotel balcony just watching this green yuck come in over the horizon.
Yeah.
It was a horrible thing. So nobody is against, this is the good uses of government. Mm-hmm. What government is for, and as I say, this is the problem of the commons, is solving the problem that no one person has, but we all have. So in other words, a factory doesn't have a problem with the air because it just wants to build its stuff, but all of us together have a problem with the air, and that's what we use government for. The problem is what the left does continuously is they take legitimate problems and they cause hysteria about them, and then they try to use them to seize all this power. It's not like, oh, let's keep the air clean, let's set reasonable standards for air and let each state find a way to meet those standards. It's like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. If you don't sign on to this, you're a Holocaust denier. We're going to be burned to death in 2 years, or as Al Gore would say, we're going to die 2 years ago. And so you have to give government all the power and all the control over our energy sources, or else you're a horrible, horrible human being. Mm-hmm. That's a crazy, stupid argument that we shouldn't even allow to happen, but what happens is the press amplifies that argument and cuts us off when we say, you know what, I'm happy to take care of the air, happy to take care of our water, we all want that, calm down. Mm-hmm. Because, by the way, if the world is going to burn up, you can't do one damn thing about it. So don't destroy our economies, don't take over everything, don't be in control of everything. As far as I'm concerned, like the EPA, for instance,
Scott Pruitt, fellow Oakey,
yes,
head of the EPA.
And doing a great job. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love what he's doing. Should be like 52 guys with one of those pool testers, that tells how clean the water is.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Each one should go to a state and dip it in and say, hey, your water's a little dirty. And they say, we'll clean it, come back in 6 months, test it again. That's it. Just set the bar where it's supposed to be, and then stop telling people what to do. But the left is all about regulating everything, so they always want to make a panic. It can't be, these city neighborhoods are a problem. It has to be racism in America. There's no more racism in America than there is anywhere else. In fact, less, I would say. Mm-hmm. Having lived other places, I would say much less in America. Mm. But they always are trying to take little grains of truth and blow them up into, you know, tremendous
forests
of sensation. Yeah.
Okay, moving along. Don't forget to ask questions as a subscriber. You have to log in. So if you're writing things on Facebook or YouTube right now, I'm sorry, we cannot see them because you need to be a subscriber. Log into the website, dailywire.com, and head over to the conversation page to watch the live stream. After that, just start typing into the Daily Wire chat box where Drew will answer questions as they come in for an entire hour. I'm not used to calling you Drew. Do you prefer to be called Drew or Andrew?
I don't mind. You know, Andrew Clavin was always my professional name because nobody ever heard of Bill Shakespeare, so I thought when I write a book, it should have Andrew Clavin on it, but most people have always called me Drew once.
Okay, good to know. So I guess I can start calling you Drew. Next question is from Emmanuel. He says that he has a silly question for Overlord Clavin. What is your favorite Daily Wire cartoon?
Daily Wire cartoon? Mm-hmm. What Daily Wire cartoons? I read the Daily Wire all the time. I've never. Do we have cartoons on the Daily Wire?
Make a lot of cartoons.
You guys. I've always liked our funny videos. Is that what they're talking about? The funny videos?
The little cartoon bits.
Yeah. Okay. I find a lot of those funny, and my mind has gone completely blank.
On a specific favorite?
Yeah.
Well, I'll ask you. I'll remind you later, and then maybe Drew can tweet it out for everybody.
What?
The hippo.
What did the hippo do?
In your monologue. Remember the hippo that killed you that one time?
Oh, yes, that was funny. All right, we'll say the hippo. The hippo on my own.
So now, Emmanuel, serious question. What is your biggest letdown and biggest win for President Trump?
Oh, good question. Well, I think the thing that, I mean, we've all gotten so tired of saying it. They keep saying, it's the Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch, but that's not it.
I mean, really?
No, because it's not just Gorsuch.
Okay.
He is completely changing the nature of the federal courts. And as much as conservatives hate Mitch McConnell has just gotten rid of this thing they call the blue slip rule. He's cleared that way. So a lot of these guys are being confirmed. Trump's justice picks and judge picks have been spectacular, as somebody said in an article, Scalia's all the way down. And I think that is just terrific. I also love, and this has been a bugbear of mine for a long time, these regulations that Obama specifically, but really the government as a whole, has been using to control people's lives. Mm-hmm. So they pass these laws and they'll say, well, yes, but we passed the law, but here is an agency that is going to make the regulations. And the agency just endlessly, what the guy does. He goes to work at the agency and makes regulations. And so Trump's rule that you have to cut two regulations for every new one you make, spectacular. Those are the things I really do love.
And do you see that being implemented in places?
Oh, yeah. It's actually happening. Yes, it's actually happening. And it's happening in terms of cutting back regulations that forced religious people to provide birth control that they didn't want to provide, and the EPA regs against coal usage he's cut back. He's really done a good job with that. Obviously, he has not been as successful wrangling the cats in the Congress. He's not a...
So would you say that's your biggest letdown from him?
No, I would not.
Okay, so what's your biggest letdown?
I would say my biggest letdown with him so far is that he hasn't tempered his tone to get past the bullying. He's starting to. One of the things I keep saying about Trump, and no one will listen to me, Alicia, I keep saying this, is he learns stuff. You can watch him do it. You can watch him get better at things. You know, he's a very successful man. He was very successful. He changed the skyline of New York in the 70s and 80s, and he did it when people had given up on New York, and he was a big success on TV and all this stuff, as he will be the first person to remind you.
But great ratings, but huge.
Huge. It's like, but he that bullying thing where he belittles people, I think, I understand why people like it, because we're all tired of being pushed around by the press, basically. Mm-hmm. We all feel that we haven't had a voice. Barack Obama was a quiet man, but he was a very, very nasty man. He really divided us and all this stuff. Still, I want to hit back. I want to hit back hard. But I also want to hit back it's not that I want to play by gentlemen's rules, but I don't want to be as big a bully as they are. I don't see it. If we keep sinking to each other's levels, eventually we just disappear into the earth.
This ties into the question that was asked earlier about the war and the glory of war.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of the support for Donald Trump did go back to those people that felt like they've been delegitimized or they can't be that macho kind of
you know,
have that bravado anymore. And so even though Trump might be a little more extreme than they would be in their everyday life, they like cheer him on because they're like, well, somebody's finally saying it.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And I got so angry at Bill Kristol today. He put out a tweet saying, oh, I like everything that Trump is doing, but it's not worth his degrading of the culture. And I thought, shut up, you know, like, what are you know, what are you, I'm like sitting around with your champagne and caviar saying, oh, that he's degrading the culture of the country. No, I will not go that far. I like what he's doing. I think it's much more important. But I do want the guys who represent me, who are standing up for our side, I do want them to fight intensely and without, you know, any kind of holding back. But they don't have to be small, and they don't have to be personal, and they don't have to be bullying. And sometimes Trump is. He's getting better. He's not the man he was. A little bit. Not the man he was. There are things that he's done. The other thing that I would say disappoints me about him, but I knew this, so it doesn't disappoint me, is that he does have this Democrat strain on him, you know? So he wants to get, he keeps talking about repealing and replacing Obamacare, but he doesn't want to get rid of it. He really does feel that deep down, he feels that government health care is a good thing.
And wants everyone to have coverage.
Everyone to have coverage. And I feel like, I don't know if you can square that circle. You know, you can't have an insurance business that insures people who are already sick. And they have this thing, you know, like, what do they call it? Where they have a word for it.
Pre-existing
conditions. That's insane, right? How, as an insurer, if you take insurance from me, I'm betting that you won't get sick.
Yeah.
If you're already sick, I've already lost the bet. Why would I insure you, you know? So I do feel that there has to be a level of care for people who can't afford it, who are indigent and all this stuff. But Trump does have a certain leftist strain, and it comes out from time to time. That always disappoints me, too.
So Drew thinks that Donald Trump is improving his skills when it comes to communication and learning some things.
I do.
But if you want to improve your skills, then you need to head on over to Skillshare. They're our generous sponsor of this episode of The Conversation with Andrew Klavan.
What a great segue.
I tried.
You should go into broadcasting. Well, you know, here's the thing. For my birthday, which was many months ago, my wife got me a keyboard. And you might say, can you play the keyboard? No, I can't.
Okay.
But this is something that, you know, when I was a kid, I wrote music. I actually performed in coffee shops and things like this.
Oh, wow.
I know, I did. And I would like to go back to doing that sometimes and see if I can write again.
Okay.
But I don't know how to play the keyboard, and I don't know how to play the piano. But Skillshare, there's more than 17,000 classes. These are video classes taught by leading experts in their field.
So you can learn visually and, like, audibly
as
well. Yes,
and the thing about it is, too, you pay a price to be on the site. But then it's not like, oh, we're going to stop midway unless you pay us again. You can watch the entire thing.
I
know, it drives me absolutely crazy. Taught by industry, they call it the Netflix for online learning. You can take classes in graphic design, DSLR photography, social media marketing, digital illustration, and much more. They're taught, Skillshare classes are taught by industry experts and experienced professionals. Perfect if you're looking to build your career or start a little sideline like my piano. Skillshare has given my listeners a 1 month free trial of unlimited access to over 17,000 classes. What you do is you go to www.skillshare.com/Andrew and start your free month today.
I love that we get free months.
I know.
Well, I don't know if we do because we work here, but the listeners do.
They gave me a free thing to test it out, but it is kind of, you know, I always feel like, why am I selling this to you if it's free? Just get it. Try it.
Yeah, just try it out. Yeah. It can't hurt.
Absolutely.
Next question is from Luke Jackson. He wants to know, do you believe that as the culture shifts continually towards social programs becoming more popular, that there will be a point at which the concept of individualism will be abandoned for globalism?
Yeah, of course. Of course. If we look, nothing is free. Every social program they give you buys one of your freedom. That's the point of them. They're not giving them to you because they're such nice guys. They're giving them to you because they give you them more power over your life. It is natural for people who run for office, who want to be in charge, to be in charge. That's what they want. And so they sit and I've talked to a lot of these people, and they stop thinking of their constituents as free people capable of making decisions. You know, whenever they have one of those congressional budget things where they decide how much things are going to cost.
The ones that no one watches.
And no one watches and nobody believes because they're never right.
Yeah.
The reason they're never right is they never take into account that people are going to make independent decisions based on what they see before them. So absolutely. I mean, I think that this is another thing. When our first question was about how can you have a conversation with people when they're demonizing you all the time. And the conversation that we always have about these things is, oh, here, look at the poor child. If you take this program away, the poor child will die, right? And we never have the question of, like, how can we solve that problem without taking our freedoms away? Nobody ever says it. I've never seen anybody say it, even on the right. They never say, okay, let's agree there's a problem. Mm. Now let's talk about what might work in order to preserve our freedoms, in order where I don't have to take somebody's money away. It's not my money, it's their money. I don't have to take somebody's money away and just give it to this person who's only gonna then become dependent on that money. I mean, I've talked to welfare workers and they call it welfare psychosis, where after a while you start to show up and say, where's my welfare money? As if it were your welfare money. It's not. It's charity, forced charity, being taken away from somebody else and given to you. It's not an entitlement. You are not entitled to it. The person who worked for that money is entitled to it. You are being given it. It's being taken away by force and given to you. And so, I don't want people to starve in this country or any country. I don't want people to starve. I don't want them to be sick without getting health care. But nobody ever asks the question, how can we solve this problem and keep people free? Because it's too easy to throw money at things. And it always breaks stuff. It always takes people's freedom. And it doesn't really help people. I mean, I think that when people get addicted to welfare, when they get addicted to entitlements, it's hard to get them off. Mm-hmm. And where is, after all, I mean, as we've just seen with Obamacare, who has the political courage to cut back an entitlement once it's been given to someone?
It's
and the
be
answer
hard.
Is precious few people. Yeah. And this is another reason why I feel the press is so to blame. I really feel the media is to blame for almost all of our problems.
But how much responsibility is on the actual voter, though, to make themselves aware?
Well, I mean, you're right, of course, but I mean, people are, you know, we're all of us fallen, we're all of us corrupt, and we can be bought, and that's the thing, you know, once they start giving you that money, nobody wants to give it back, you know, and you also think, like, oh, if I lose this, what will I do? Whatever will I do? Instead of, well, you know, take the money away, and I'll go find it somewhere else, I'll work, I'll do something else. So, you know, I'm not against the safety net. I feel that when you start talking about college should be free. My first thought is, you know, I have to put my kids through college. Why do I have to put your kids through college? I don't get that. I don't understand it. Seriously, I work really, really hard.
That sounds a lot like Ben. Like, he only cares about his wife and his kids. Yeah. Doesn't care about you.
Well, you know, it's like, I'm a much, much nicer person than Ben, as you can tell.
But, yes, I can attest to this.
No, but I do care, and I do want people, but I don't see, I mean, I broke my back to put my kids through good schools. I didn't break my back to put your kids through good schools. I expect you to do that.
Oh, I'm working on breaking my back to get my kid to a good school.
Yeah.
Dear Lord have mercy. Might have to bring her to the office and homeschool her.
So words that don't exist to me, free. That's one of the many words that just doesn't exist. There is no such thing as free. You know, I mean, the moon belongs to everyone, but the best things in life are not free.
Moving along. Jeremiah Peterson wants to know, Emperor of the land and the sea and the West Coast. Hi. He says that Ben says that he finds friends kind of useless. Do you feel this way as well? Do you know many people as friends or only have a small pool? Are you quality versus quantity guy?
I don't even have a small pool. I hate pool. Oh, that's not what you meant. Ben said he finds friends kind of useless. I love him.
That's why I'm surprised that he said that, like, Jeremy, our very own Jeremy Boring, is his friend.
Yes,
he is.
Like,
oh, wow, that's a big... I mean, I know Jeremy's your friend.
And Jeremy...
But it's interesting. Everybody around here is friends with the boss.
But I was friends with the boss before he was the boss. And so was Ben. You know, Jeremy Boring, who I always laughingly call the God King of the Daily Wire, built this place. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did. And he genuinely is a brilliant guy. Mm-hmm. And he really made this place and took it. We were doing these videos in his pool house to begin with. And now we're in these beautiful studios and all this stuff.
But don't say where they are.
No. Because they'll come after us. So if that is one of Ben's useless friends, I only wish that I had as many useless friends as Ben had. And I find friends to be one of the great, great consolations of life. It is an interesting thing when you have a good marriage, and I have a 40-year marriage. I've had one argument with my wife in 40 years. I mean, seriously, we have a very intensely romantic marriage, and it does tend to exclude. It does tend to create a world around you and your family that excludes other people and doesn't let them get quite as close as they might get if I were alone. If I were alone, I'd be inviting these clowns over all the time just because I had no one else to talk. And look at them. I mean, that's how desperate I would be. So. You know, so that does you do have this intense friendship with your wife that does put you in a different position. Mm-hmm. But I just find friends, conversation, ideas exchanged, pain and mm-hmm. pleasures exchanged. I find that to be one of the great consolations in life. Life has many difficult things about it, obviously, not the least of which being that it ends and that it's, you know, it's full of pain and suffering and loss and goodbyes. And I just find other human beings to be just one of the great joys of life. And I say this as a writer who, as I said, spends a lot of time alone. But I think basically if you tied Ben down and started to torture him. We'll try it. After the show, we'll go try it.
Okay.
I think he would admit that his friends were important to him, too.
I'm always fascinated, too. I think that there's such a difference between male friendships and female friendships.
Interesting.
And I think that sometimes society doesn't put enough stock in the importance of, like, man-to-man friendship.
Well, I think that...
And, like, the beauty of that and, like, going through life together of that.
You know, there's a wonderful short story by Henry James called The Great Good Place. Mm-hmm. I stole the name from my memoir, The Great Good Thing, from The Great Good Place. And it's this dream he has of heaven where it's basically just men walking around discussing ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think that I kind of understand that. I mean, there's nothing I like better than a drink and a cigar and to sit and chat about, you know, what's going on and religion and all these things.
See, women do the same thing, except usually at the nail salon. If you want to ask questions, please be sure to become a subscriber because only subscribers can ask questions. That's why I'm repeating it so much because I don't want y'all to get mad at me. You can become a Daily Wire subscriber by going to our website, dailywire.com, and head over to the conversation page to watch this live stream. After that, just start typing into the Daily Wire chat box where Drew will answer questions as they come in. We're keeping the questions rolling. Next question is from Christian Silva. Wow, man, you have like lots of nicknames here.
these are not my nicknames. These are my titles.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, great one. So, Christian asks, hello, Klavan Supreme Leader of the Multiverse.
Yeah, that's actually on my business card.
I cannot say these like with a straight face. Sorry. Although Trump has taken the office and there is a Republican majority in both the House and the Senate, the military seems to keep declining. Why?
I'm not entirely sure that's true. It takes a long time. I mean, Obama gutted the military. And, you know, you can say it was because of sequestration, but sequestration was a gimmick that Obama basically stepped into and then used to gut the military. The military was really in bad shape. I don't think that it is true that it is necessarily declining still. I think what is true is that it takes a long time to build up the military once, you know, you've let it decline.
Well, and even before him, I mean, George W. Bush tried to rebuild a little bit.
Right.
But, of course, the strain that Iraq and Afghanistan had on the military, and people don't talk about this much, but President Bill Clinton did a lot to cut to military.
That's right. That's right. And it really was a strain we didn't entirely pay for. Mm-hmm. The George W. Bush freedom agenda was... I looking back on it, I agreed with some of it, but mm-hmm. I have to say that some of it was ill thought out. I think the Trump will start to bring the military back. We're in terrible debt, you know, also, and we have to be careful that we have a military that is lean and mean rather than one that is expansive and just full of just sucking up money. I do think that there is coming a point, and I think this is something I like about Trump. He's doing it instinctively. I worry a little bit about that because you have to do this well. But he is instinctively a little bit of an isolationist. I'm not an isolationist, but I am a contained, I do not think we can police the world. I don't think we can fight the world. I don't think we can save the world. I think that we have to defend our own borders first, our own people first, then our allies, and then whatever else we can do. But I think we do need a lean, mean military. And I have a hope that he'll bring it back from where it's been, anyway.
Okay, say that S word again.
Which?
The you talked about Obama. I don't want to say it because I don't want to jinx how you say it.
What did I say?
The Ted Cruz, Obama using it as an excuse for military cuts.
Oh, no.
This is like the caramel, caramel, tomato, tomato thing.
What did you spell it?
You said sequestration.
Sequestration. What do you say?
I thought it was sequestration.
Oh, sequestration. Who cares?
Everybody, write in if
because
you...
Because I never would have known what word
you
were
talking. Do
you
agree with me or not? Are there speaking skills on Skillshare.com?
there probably are. There's almost everything. There's 17,000 classes. They've got almost 3 million members, so they have to have everything. I will tell you, though, here is a funny one that I did.
Okay.
Michael Knowles Knowles and I have done this fictional podcast called Another Kingdom. You know, it's a story, a serial story that we're telling.
Okay.
And we're putting it up on another website, Ricochet, because we can't do it here because it's got some bad language in it and stuff like that. So we were having such a hard time doing this. Uh-huh. We actually both began to believe that the devil was trying to keep Another Kingdom off the air. So I was so frustrated. I went on Skillshare, so mm-hmm. help me. How do you do a podcast? Because I do a podcast here, but this place is so big and so well managed yep. that all I have to do is come in and talk. So this was the first time I was really yep. instructing. And sure enough, Skillshare had video lessons on how to
do
a podcast, and they were really useful. It is just a good place for online learning. All these videos, series of videos, mm-hmm. and they don't stop in the middle and make you pay for more. You get one price and you get them all. You can take classes in graphic design, photography, social media marketing, digital illustration, much more. Skillshare classes are taught by industry experts, experienced professionals, and they're perfect if you're looking to build your career or start the side hustle of your dreams. Skillshare is giving my listeners 1 month free trial of unlimited access to over 17,000 classes. Go to www.skillshare.com/Andrew and start a free month today.
I just loved hearing you say side hustle, because I've been waiting for you to say that all day.
Sequestration.
So, Brendan, I hope I'm saying that right. Brendan Gilroy, he wants to know, what's your view on cussing? But you just admitted you cursed a little bit on this other podcast with Michael Knowles. He said, I've listened to your audiobook for The Empire of Lies, and I remember hearing you cuss and say some colorful things, and it made me wonder how you felt about it in everyday life.
I can tell you two funny stories about this. I used to play tennis. I don't anymore, but I used to play tennis. And when you play tennis,
a little McEnroe?
Sometimes you have a bad day. And I was playing a guy, and I was saying, gol darn it, gosh, rotten, stupid, you know. And he stopped the game. This guy stopped the game and uh-huh. came to the net and said, listen, I read your books. There's no gull darn it in your books. You know, people curse in your books. And I said, well, those are in my books. This uh-huh. is a club. I said, there are ladies here. He said, there are no ladies in your books either. I said, that's true. And the other thing is, I was just talking about this book, Another Kingdom.
Uh-huh.
It's absolutely true. When I started writing it, I thought, you know, it has an underpinning of Christian thought in mm-hmm. it. It's not a preachy book, it's not a Christian book, but it has this underpinning. And I thought it would be really nice, because I know the Christian audience is very delicate when it comes to cursing.
I'm really from the nice Bible Belt, I get this.
If I could write the book without curses in mm-hmm. it. I wrote the entire first draft, we're talking about 350 pages, I wrote the entire first draft without any curses in it, and it was absurd. It just was not the
didn't
way
seem, because real it didn't seem real
speak.
To you?
It didn't seem real at all. And it wasn't. And you know, you get to this point where people are screaming at each other and they're saying, you stinky pop, you know. You think, wait a minute, what, you know. So basically, I rewrote it and I put the curses back in. And there have been people commenting, there's not a lot. It's not like, you know, it's not like every other word. It's not the Sopranos or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's just that people curse when they curse. I do not curse in front of women.
Thank you.
I try very hard not to curse in front of women. I'm not always successful at what I do. I have to admit, when I'm alone with the boys and we're sitting around, uh-huh. I get a little raw. But shut up, you. I hate to say this because I know it's uh-huh. like unmodern, but uh-huh. I still don't like hearing women curse.
Okay, I was going to say, after being on radio for 4 years with Ben Shapiro,
yeah.
and, you know, the guys talk during commercial break, yeah. and we're like, you know, joking around and all that stuff. I'm not a curser.
Yeah.
Like, I only curse if you like hurt me or my family,
right.
and then I will mess you up with my words and my heels.
Right.
Like, it's going down. And Ben always said that he thinks that cursing for like guys is a normal, natural thing to express yourself,
uh-huh.
but it seems like dirty when a woman does it.
You know,
so what are your thoughts on that?
It doesn't seem dirty. It just doesn't seem ladylike. I think I'm just old-fashioned enough to sort of expect women to elevate the room. You know, when women come in, everybody gets better. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, listen, I used to work in a newsroom.
So y'all are scoundrels and we just like enlighten you a little bit.
I used to work in a newsroom that was all guys.
Mm-hmm.
It smelled bad. The language was bad. People behaved badly. And then they hired a couple of women and everything was nicer. It's just like, I mean, and in England, there are these clubs still where they don't let women in.
Uh-huh.
And you go there and it's all these old men smoking cigars with ashes on their vest and snoring and all this stuff. And then you go to the club clubs where they let women in. Everybody's talking and they're polite and it's lovely. You know, it's like, I think women have always in my life elevated a room. And I just, I still can't get used to it. Obviously, I don't I don't go around lecturing people about it, but I still don't like it when women curse around me.
Interesting. Yeah. Good to know. Leon Clark wants to know, where did you live when you lived in the UK, and are you visiting again anytime soon?
I visited just a few months ago. Oh, nice. I still have many, many friends there, and I loved it. I lived in, I guess technically it's South Kensington. Mm-hmm. I was on the border of Earl's Court. I lived in a building where Princess Di lived when she was just Miss Di or Lady Di or whatever she was. And I lived right in this. It was a beautiful, beautiful neighborhood right off the Old Brompton Road. And I could walk to my offices, different offices that I had at the time. And I just, I loved that city. I have to tell you that it was like falling in love. I'm not kidding. I lived for years there. I don't think my feet touched the ground. And it was just like falling in love. I would wake up every morning eager to see the city. I loved seeing the city. I felt elevated and up all the time. I just loved it. And I was there for 7 years. After 6.5 years, this weird switch turned on in my head. Mm-hmm. And it was coming up on the millennium. Mm-hmm. And I think that had a lot to do with it too, because one day I was at a party for it was all expatriate writers, mm-hmm. and we were all leaving, and it was, you know, the millennium was coming. Yeah, I'm moving back, and something just kind of switched. Like, I didn't want to die in England. I didn't want to die an Englishman. I felt it like I'm an American. Mm-hmm. I loved my country, but man, oh man, I still love that country today. It's not, I can't recapture mm-hmm. that love I felt for it then, but I love the people. I had made many good friends there, and I go back and visit. I try to go back and visit as often as I can.
Any plans for speeches there anytime soon? Because I feel like that was going to be a follow-up.
If they call me, if they'll pay me to go over there, I'll certainly go.
Okay. I think the next question we had was going to be from Connor.
Yep.
There we go. God Emperor Clavin. It better be God with a little G,
that's
Connor.
That's a different business card.
Don't be blasphemous now. How do conservatives take back the culture?
Oh, man.
I think this is like... It's always an interesting question that everybody wants to know the answer to.
Well, for one thing, you have to love the culture. Mm-hmm. The arts cannot be saved by people who don't love them. Hmm. And, you know, you talk about cursing and all that stuff. Obviously, the important thing about a work of art is not whether people curse in it, not whether people are naked in it, but whether it represents the inner life of man accurately. Hmm. And one of the things that I despise about the left is that they know how to make stories that touch on the inner life and then fill them with propaganda that's untrue. Yeah. So for instance, a classic example, well, Avatar was probably a great example. I mean, there's a classic story, guy goes back, he goes native and all this stuff, but it was filled with images that just weren't true of American military destroying the energy source of an innocent, noble savages and all mm-hmm. this stuff. But if a story tells the truth, almost all good stories are conservative, because if you tell a story that tells the truth, it's about individuals, it's about the God, it's about nobility and all this stuff. We have to take back the culture by participating in the culture, we have to take back the culture by making culture, and we have to take back the culture by supporting people who make culture. And this is the thing, this is the big one. There are a million conservative think tanks. They built an entire system to mm-hmm. fight back about the universities. Not one of them deals with the arts. We have think tanks about law, we have think tanks about legislation, we have think tanks about city policy. There's not one think tank. This is what Andrew Breitbart wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Breitbart, before he died, I'm gonna make you the president of my artistic think tank. And I said, sign me up, I'll do it, you know. And then he didn't live to do it. I think that we need awards for artists. Artists work for love. You know, I know this. You know, we need the money, but we work for the love. We need awards. We need review venues. You know, you look at the Weekly Standard and the National Review and all this. They don't have people dedicated to movies, dedicated to books. They have people who will review books and review movies, but they don't really know. You pick up the New Yorker and you read Denby, I think his mm-hmm. name is. He really knows the movies. I mean, they've got another guy, Anthony Lane, who doesn't know the movies, but one of their guys really knows the movies. You pick up, I don't want to name names, but you pick up a lot of conservative things and they will write about the arts, but not with the kind of expertise that gives a review the kind of bite that it needs. We need review venues, we need studios, we need people to buy some movie making studios mm-hmm. or at least create some movie making and TV making studios. We need publishing houses, we need all that infrastructure, and we don't have it. Mm-hmm. I, people like me, and I have fought and scratched and done very well as a writer of fiction, but I have done it basically by just kind of bullying my way through, and I've never, you know.
Well, and a lot of talent.
Well, thank you. But I didn't want to say that, but no, you know, but I think that, like, it shouldn't be, it's always going to be hard to be an artist because everybody wants to do it, mm-hmm. but it shouldn't be so hard to be a conservative artist, and conservatives just don't care. I mean, they just don't care. And it is like, I've made the speech so many times that I got tired of making it, where I'd say, you have to support the arts. And I always used to joke that they look at me like my wife looks at me when I tell her that when you buy something on sale, it still costs money. You know, my wife looks at me like, you're a cute person. You know, I like you, but I don't know what you're talking about. You know, that's the way conservatives say when you say, you know, the arts are where you lose the culture. It's where we lose elections. Barack Obama would never have been elected if the arts and our culture had not eaten away the ground of freedom under our feet for 50 years before.
That's a really good point. And don't forget, if you want to ask questions, we only have a few minutes left, so be sure to log on to our website, dailywire.com, and head over to the conversation page to watch this stream live. After that, just try typing into the Daily Wire chat box, where Drew will answer questions until we run out of time. So let's try to breeze through some more before we run out of that time. All right, Ryan wants to know, is the moral development towards the left with the scary things it entails inevitable?
It's inevitable over the long term, because leftism is a form of decay, and all things that humans make die and decay. But as I always say, you don't have to win over the long term, you just have to win today. Conservatives are like doctors. We know we'll lose, because freedom always dies, but it doesn't have to die today. And if it doesn't die, if you keep it alive long enough, then you die and you don't have the problem anymore, and it belongs to your children. So all nations
fall. Sometimes I'd like to have some freedom to leave to my children one day.
No, me too. And freedom is a living thing, and all living things die. Freedom is a human thing, and all human things die. Countries are human things, and all human things die. Keep it alive today. Keep it alive today and tomorrow, and never despair. And I mean, this is the thing. I used to tease Ben when Ben and I first met. I said, he was very pessimistic. And I said,
was?
Yeah, I know. But, and I said to him, you're like a doctor who, like, a 30-year-old man comes in, and you say, you're going to die. And he says, when? He said, well, in 50 years. You know, well, everybody's going to die in 50 years. Look, you lose the battle, but you don't lose it today, and that's all we have. You
know? Okay. Veronica Young wants to know, she calls you handsome.
That's on my business
card. Watch out, Mrs. Yeah. Clavin. What do you do when you still love someone who has rejected you? It feels dishonest in my heart to date someone else, even though I try. How do you turn off, reshape, or ignore that love?
It's so tough. I mean, look, this is a question. One of the things is, you cannot take the pain out of life. Hmm. Life is painful. There's a lot of loss. Even when you're happy, you know, your children grow up, you know, you grow old. Everything is always, your parents die. Everything is about letting go in life. And it's an art you have to perfect if you're going to love life and enjoy life. And this is true of someone, you know, most of us have had this experience. I certainly have. When you love someone who doesn't love you back, you got to let them go. And it is something you just have to practice and until you get it right, you know. And it's, the thing is, you can't, it becomes masochistic. You know, you're starting to enjoy the pain of it. If you just linger on, it's time to move on. It is, you know, having your heart broken, I mean, like I said, an experience we all go through, most of us go through, but it is something you just have to learn to let go of, and you have to learn to, like, you almost have to learn to enjoy the melancholy of goodbye, because so much of life is goodbye. Every day in life is goodbye in some way or other.
I think in different stages of your life, there's different stages of goodbye.
That's right, exactly. You're always saying goodbye to something, but you do not want to lose the love that's waiting for you, that God has waiting for you, because that wasn't it. You know, feel the pain, suffer the pain, move on. It's the only thing you can do.
Relationship advice from Andrew Clavin.
Listen,
but wise words. I'm going to totally butcher this name. Iago Quintana. I hope I said that right. Oh, he says, Señor. Clevenístico.
Clevenístico magnífico.
Magnífico. Like, how can conservatives make sense of the argument that although man is inherently evil, the community will still step in to take care of the needy without government intervention?
Okay. Well, wait a minute. I mean, all government is a power center, and we need power centers to achieve things that require power. Mm-hmm. But it is still filled with people. Government is not, some magic entity that just does the right thing. It's still filled with people. So if people are fallen and corrupt and evil, there's a good chance that government will be fallen and corrupt and evil. We all know that we need government. I mean, was it Madison? Yes, it was Madison who said, men were angels, we would not need government, men are not angels, we need government. That's not the argument we're having. This always really bothers me, that that's not the argument we're having. We're not having whether we need government. The question should be, how small can we keep government and still have a society? You know, and as far as I'm concerned, it's smaller. We should keep experimenting, keep pushing the envelope. If it gets too small and we have chaos, good, bring it back a little bit. But it's always government's natural tendency is to grow. We should fight that natural tendency and keep pushing back and pushing back. There's no question that we need government. That's not the question. It's how little government can we have, because the bigger the government is, the less free you are.
And I think part of Iago's question, though, was, how do we guarantee, though, that because men are not perfect, that they're going to step up to maybe do that charitable work to fill the void?
Well, I think that all of our founding fathers said, basically, that our Constitution is built for a religious people. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things we're suffering from is that we're no longer a religious people. And there's an open question whether an irreligious people can be free. You know, I mean, if we're not going to take care of each other, it's not about government goes away and we don't do anything. It's having communities that care for their weak people in it. That is an element of our founding faith of Christianity, that we take care of the people who fall behind. It's not, I mean, this is the thing. The argument is not between government taking care of people and oh to hell with them. It's government taking care of people or finding other ways to do it. And I think we should really work hard to find community ways to do it. Guys like Barack Obama purposely set out to destroy independent communities of helping, and I think we should purposely set out to rebuild them.
That's a good point. Last question, Great Overlord Clavin. Sorry, I can't get over these. These are cracking me up. You must have a lot of business cards. What could pro-lifers do in pop culture to change hearts and minds? Maybe a sci-fi analogy, and can anything that would make a truly powerful statement actually get produced?
Very tough. If you're talking about Hollywood, not so much. But one of the things that has really frustrated Hollywood is they find that they can't make abortion a happy ending. They can't turn it into a happy ending, and they have tried and tried and tried. But they can't, because it's not a happy ending. It's a despicable, horrible thing. I think there's a show called The Good Doctor, which I haven't seen, in which a mother actually stands up and says, I'm not, even if you want me to, I'm not having an abortion, and actually stands up against it. You know, we can tell those stories, but it's hard. I mean, we don't own the culture. They took the culture. We have to take it back. And I think that these are stories, you know, I mean, I wrote the story, the Gosnell story. They still haven't released it. They still haven't found a way. They made the film, but even that was very, very difficult. And I'm not sure how it turned out. You know, I'm just the screenwriter, so I only see it when I write. When I write them, they're great, but they don't always turn out that way. But like, you know, it has been very, very difficult. If you go on, there's a movie called something like October Baby or something like that, which is a pro-life movie. Go on Rotten Tomatoes and it gets something like a 98% from people and a 2% review from the reviewers, because the reviewers are out to get it. This is an absolute a sacrament among the left. And you know, I was talking about this today on my show. I understand why they want abortion. I think it's a fundamental injustice built into nature that when you have sex with a woman, she can get pregnant. It means that she is not as free as you are. You know, she is, and we all want people to be free, and I understand. But unfortunately, there are things like, you can't say, well, you know, you don't like your wife, so kill her. You can't say, oh, well, the baby creates a problem, so kill it. That's simply a moral line we should not cross. So it's not like, you know, this is what I talked about before, about the press making it so we're always at each other's throats and there's no conversation we can have. We can have a conversation about this, I think, but with some people. But I think that the press and the arts and the culture that the left controls has gone out of its way to make this a sacrament that somehow, and by the way, they're losing. They're losing because the argument, I mean, the thing is science is on our side here. You know, people always say to me, you know, Thomas Aquinas said that you could, it's possible. He was against abortion, but he said it is acceptable to have abortion before the baby quickens, before it moves. And I thought, yeah, because he didn't have a scanner where he could see.
He didn't have an ultrasound.
If Thomas Aquinas had an ultrasound, he would not have said that. You know?
Or he could have seen the heartbeat,
that's
or
right.
A blood test that showed whether it was a boy or a girl.
Exactly. I mean, science is on our side. But I do think, look, you can't ask me how we can make cultural artifacts in a world where the left owns the culture. They don't own it entirely anymore because there's so many ways to publish books yourself, to put out little videos, to do all this stuff, all the things that I've done. I mean, I have done all these videos. I've done videos about abortion. I've done video. You know, you fight back We're in a guerrilla war. That is what the culture is. We're in a guerrilla war, and I know this because I am a guerrilla in both senses of the word. And you fight back from the places we have. It worked when we fought the British in the Revolution. It's going to work now. We're going to beat them. We're going to beat them by popping out from behind YouTube, from popping out from behind podcasts, from popping out from behind trees, and taking down this empire one step at a time. And I do believe we'll win.
Okay, Andrew. Drew, I'm going to have to get used to calling you that. We can have a conversation here. Overlord Drew. And we thank you guys for tuning in for this conversation with our very own Andrew Klavan. This episode was sponsored by Skillshare. And don't forget that Michael Knowles' conversation has been confirmed. And he and I will be sitting down in his studio Tuesday, November 14th at 2 p.m. Pacific and 5 p.m. Eastern time. I'm Alicia Krause. This is the wonderful Andrew Klavan. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. And we'll see you next time. I'm just assuming.
You guys are muted.
Yeah. Well, last time they said we were muted, and Ben and I were so like, "This is
muted."
Sorry, I had to take the earpiece off because it was like about to fall off, and it was just nobody was talking to me anyway, so I was like, "Okay."
You were sitting right here. I don't know why you.
Well, I was.
In case anyone in the back needed to say anything.
Oh, I see. Okay.